Radio Free Credit Union Show with your hosts, Jason Dias and Troy Hall. If it's Friday, it's Radio Free.
Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever you may be across this wonderful country of ours. My name is Jason Dias, and we are broadcasting live from the offices of Eloquent Online here in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and as always, joined by your friend and mine, the COO of South Carolina Federal Credit Union, Mr. Troy Hall.
Hey, Jason.
How are you doing?
I am doing great. It is a beautiful day here in Charleston, and as usual, even when it rains, the sun still shines.
Yes, it does indeed. We are back. I thought I would delay the intro just to be funny. But we've had a very, very fun, full week here at the Radio Free Credit Union Show. And with GAC behind us, we thought, man, it would be a great time to kind of talk about things related to the GAC, the NCUA. It's timely. We had hoped to have Lynn Stevens on the show. He won the HR Executive at the Leadership Awards out at GAC, but his flight changed. He's not getting back to Utah till 12:35 today. So host note, we will have him next Friday on the Radio Free Credit Union show. So if you want to find out, you know, you want to hear from somebody who is absolutely the best at what they do, join us next Friday here on the Radio Free Credit Union show. If it's Friday, it's Radio Free. And Troy, we've got a very interesting guest. You look at the financialbrand.com, don't you?
Yes, I do.
It's sort of like the CU Times. I can't keep up with all of the political stuff that goes on out there, all the legislation, all the legislative things that are going on with credit unions. And I can't always keep up with all the branding and marketing stuff. I get my political stuff from the CU Times, and I get my kind of my marketing and cutting-edge stuff from the Financial Brand. And we're very, very happy to welcome to the show the editor of the Financial Brand, Mr. Jeffrey Pilcher.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jeff.
Hey, Jeffrey, thank you so much for making some time today. Yeah, I told Troy a couple weeks ago on the show, I don't remember the exact date, but a few weeks back you had an article about the value of social media. And I thought it was a real gutsy article, and I think I may have even told you this in email. It's the first article I've actually printed out on paper since 2001.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, that article was somewhat controversial. It outlined 11 challenges or reasons that financial institutions struggle with social media, and it kicked off a really fiery debate. There was about I think the total now is about 110 comments, and the article had been read over 10,000 times. So. It was well received and controversial both at the same time.
Well, I know as an editor, anything that generates, talk, anything that generates debate is a good thing for a publication like yours. And the reason we wanted you on today is with GAC behind us, we've been talking all week on and off the air about the whole NCUA, the Susie Orman celebrity stuff. With my exposure to different credit unions, I'm sensing a lot of frustration with that agency right now. And I guess if you're honest about it, credit unions have never enjoyed going through the, nobody likes having the auditors come in and kind of, count the beans and stuff like that. But the frustration level at good credit unions seems to be higher than it's ever been. With something like this, a big, multi-thousand-dollar marketing deal, not talking to credit unions about it beforehand, was that a bad move for the NCUA from your perspective?
Well, it's definitely awkward, and it's complicated because the NCUA is supposed to regulate credit unions, and yet they're running ads that have an impact on credit unions and their brands. And if I'm a brand manager at a credit union, I'd like to have a say in ads that are going to be used to shape my organization's image. Now, it's not practical to expect the NCUA to be seeking some sort of consensus. But they could be providing an open comment period or allow some sort of voting or something like that, that would some mechanism that would gauge the sentiment of credit union executives and board members And I think the NCUA does this sort of thing with other advisory matters and discretionary issues. So, I haven't heard anything, you know, what amount, if any, Susie Orman may have received for her role in the NCUA's campaign, so I can't comment on that. But the big question I have is, should the NCUA be running ads at all? Maybe there's a better way, a more effective way, like PR, for them to get the message out about the increased share draft insurance coverage. And then I think you also have to wonder about the effectiveness of a campaign that's counting on donated media. You know, I saw that the campaigns received $2.6 million in free media placements, but that's really not enough to even scratch the surface for a national campaign these days. And then the quality of those, you know, the media that they're being given, you know, it's kind of like I imagine a lot of those are going to be midnight, you know, cable channel advertisements, and you know, when we have an empty spot, we'll stick you in it. But not, I can't imagine those are prime time locations they're giving away. So you have to question the reach, and you know, is this really how the NCUA should be spending its not necessarily its money, but its resources, even if money's not involved.
Yeah, I think many times, though, don't you think that it's an educational arm in that trying to reassure the general public at a time when there is a financial crisis that people need to know that their money is safe and secure? And so at a time for that, it needs decisive leadership in order to make a decision to do something, and actually having a vote by committee was not the right time to do that.
Yeah, I very much respect that argument. I can understand that completely. What I'm wondering, if for instance the decision is made and it's agreed that an ad campaign is the right way to go, then I think it begs some other questions, and among those would be, what's the best way to communicate this message? You know, is a spokesperson testimonial? You know, do you need the credibility of a spokesperson? Is there more attention getting way? I mean, I'd like to imagine there's a more edgy or creative way to get people's attention with that message. You know, you really could say, for instance, if you look at the way that the NCUA put the ads together, you could drop the spokesperson and run the ads just like that. So, I mean, there's just it's really the process of asking the questions, the kind of questions that should be asked in any creative project with any communication strategy. What's the best way for us to get our message across? But yeah, I very much understand the impracticalities involved with trying to get some sort of consensus and the rush to get the message out.
You're listening to Jeffrey Pilch. He's with the Financial Brand. You can find him at thefinancialbrand.com. Troy and I found out this week, believe me, that when you start exploring certain aspects of this entire arrangement, Troy dropped that thought on me before the show, and I have to admit, and Troy will probably appreciate this, it is actually a good point that my opinion on all this, and my last word on all this, is I don't think she's going to hurt or harm credit unions. I don't think the ad, like you said, is visible enough to make a discernible difference either way. On some level, it is kind of a bold move just to act without consulting the same audience that I complain about sometimes. So I think, Troy, you got a valid point when it comes to that.
Well, thanks. I guess, you know, the other thing that I just want to say for this, and I know this is going to sound pointed toward our credit union industry, but I really have a problem with the fact that we cannot immobilize ourselves to come up with a national brand that makes sense. And that if we look, and every time we get a little group of credit union folks together, everyone thinks that they can do it better than someone else. And as a result, it gets stalled, and we don't have anything. It's why we don't have a Got Milk. It's why we don't have any of those other national presences that these other cooperative groups have. It's because of how we just sometimes want to be so safe in our in what we do that we don't actually make a decision to encourage people to think and to be able to say, oh, okay, got it. Now there's some information for me. I mean, the point of advertising and marketing is to create a conversation in the marketplace. And realistically, if you go back to the basic principles of marketing, it's not always that people will talk well of it, but are they talking about it? Because having a conversation allows for there to be a decision point that can come from that. And it just is a way to kind of get things moving. So
I share your frustrations, Troy, with the lack of a national campaign. I've written at length on the financial brand and other venues about the frustration really stems from the core foundation of what credit unions are. And speaking from past experience, you know, I spent about 10 years in my past career as a branding consultant with credit unions, and one of the primary challenges was communicating what a credit union is, and it's very frustrating and unfortunate when credit unions have to invest their marketing capital to convey the basic message of credit unions, what a credit union is, not-for-profit, member-owned, better service rates, fees, that kind of stuff. You know, that's about all the time you have in your marketing to that's about as much time, people's time and attention that you'll be able to hold. So you've spent your marketing capital communicating basic messages when you really should be talking about the differences between you and another credit union or you and another financial institution, what makes your brand unique, not just what makes the credit union brand unique. And what I suppose is frustrating about the NCUA's campaign is it's got the governmental endorsement and Susie Orman attached to it. It's got the chance to be a highly visible campaign, and yet you look at it and you think, well, if this is the national campaign that consumers have to see, is this really a great message for them? You know, is this the best message they need to see? Share insurance, yes, I understand, and that's limited to the scope of the NCUA. But, you know, you see all these leagues and various entities try to put together a national campaign, and it just never seems to take off. And some of the challenges are what is the message? What is the message? How do you fund it? There's definitely some challenges there. But, you know, until those problems are addressed, credit unions are going to continue to have to invest marketing capital in educating consumers on the basics.
Well, listen, Jeffrey, it's the week after the Academy Awards. If I had to give an Academy Award out for the best online trade publication that looks beautiful on an iPad, you guys would win in a walk away. And I enjoy the stuff that you guys do. I enjoy the fact that you're willing to bring. You guys can look at the financialbrand.com, and this is a big conversation we had about Susie Orman. It speaks for itself. You can go there and make your own opinion. I think it's just a classical example of free speech in our marketplace, giving professionals the opportunity to agree and disagree about these many things. And I wanted to wish you continued success over at thefinancialbrand.com.
I appreciate that, Jason.
All right.
Yeah, I see you, Jeffrey.
Hey, Troy, when we come back, we're going to talk to one of the young crashers who was at the GAC this past week. That's probably going to be a lot of fun.
And I know. We'll I can't wait her. For that.
We're going to get to her right after this. We're done. We're doing it. All right. You're back on the Radio Free Credit Union show, where the hosts and the talk can be pretty interesting. Hey, Alexia, this is Jason and Troy. How's it going?
Hi, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So you're a crasher.
I am. I crashed the GAC this year.
Okay, good for you. So did you wear a costume or something?
We didn't wear a costume. They did give us out shirts from CU Swag. So we wore those on Tuesday to the GAC just kind of to stand out and grab people's attention. It was a really great conversation starter, because as soon as somebody saw you in your light blue, you know, powder blue T-shirt and everybody else is walking around with suits and ties, you know, definitely they were willing to approach us and ask us about Crash and find out more about the whole network. So it was a great experience.
I want to ask you a little bit of questions about the GAC, but first, why don't you remind everybody where you work?
I work at Aspire Federal Credit Union in Clark, New Jersey.
Okay, good. And what's your position there?
I'm the marketing manager there.
Marketing manager. So as a crasher, as a marketing manager, what was one of the highlights of the GAC for you?
For me personally, definitely the crash breakout sessions that we had our own separate sessions where speakers would come and speak only to our group, which was 16 people. So it served for a lot of open dialogue, and, you know, we had really great speakers from all over the industry. We had people from the NCUA, CUNA, WOCU, the NCUF, and Filing Research Institute. So it was great to speak in a closed group with those people. And also just the experience of actually hiking the hill and getting the credit union message up to our legislature was a really good experience for me as well.
I've been to Washington, D.C. I went to the last time I went to GAC was actually 2001. So it kind of predates all of this Twitter sphere and the Facebookization of the communications that we have at work each and every day. As somebody who's not a big proponent of the GAC, I didn't go. We sent our musicians last year, and this year we pulled back even further and said, let's the crashers are going up there. We've got a youthful presence there at the GAC. Alexia, how do we measure the effectiveness, not just of what the crashers are doing, but what happens legislatively on behalf of credit unions? How do we Is there a certain year where we can say, hey, all the money and time we spent on GAC was worth it? What do you think about that?
I can't really put a date on that, but I can say, at least from the standpoint of New Jersey credit unions, I think most other credit unions would be in agreement with me, however, that we had some really key issues this year that we were focusing on, including, you know, changing the interchange language in the financial reform bill, the tax-exempt status of credit unions and preserving our tax-exempt status, and also, you know, possibly allowing credit unions to have some kind of a supplemental capital, and also raising the business lending cap were all very important topics. So I think that a good way to measure our results for this year's GAC is to see how far we get with those key issues.
Well, like I said last year, Alexia, I'm very glad. I told this last year when we were doing the show. When I first started speaking out there in the credit union world in the early 2000s, there really wasn't a coalescence of youth. There weren't a lot of young people at the events that you would go to. And I want to thank you for taking time. I want to thank your credit union, Aspire, for letting you go up there and experience the GAC. I think it's great when young people get involved in any marketplace. And I hope you guys have a lot of success, and I'm glad you got home safe and sound.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Listen, we'll talk to you real soon.
We'll see you, Alexa.
Thank you, Jason and Troy. Have a great day.
Take care.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, with about 10 minutes in the show, Troy and I will come back, a little tough talk, and we'll do it right after this. All right, you are back on the Radio Free Credit Union show. If it's Friday, it's Radio Free. Hey, Troy, you know, Jeffrey used a word that I've heard a lot on this show, out in the marketplace, on the telephone. He used the word frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
For a Tough Talk Friday, you tell me, is it more important to acknowledge that, yes, people are frustrated with the pace of the marketplace, the what appears to be a very lengthy recessionary trend, or does it make more sense to tell people, come on, snap out of it, end your recession at your credit union today, and don't buy into all of this, you know, doom and gloom that's out there right now? That's why people like me are saying, hey, when do we see the results? When do we see the return on investment of the GAC? If we don't get interchange overturned, if we don't get, you know, member business loan caps raised in the next 3 or 4 years, is it not fair to say that maybe, you know, hiking the hill is not the best strategy for all of this?
You know, I guess I have to say to you is a couple of things, and we talked about this GAC and about its and I've even asked the question with Sarah when she was on our show, is it no longer a surprise? In other words, have we lost our momentum because the whole activity and the event and the bringing people out and having that voice, is it somehow lost? And the fact that sometimes we don't even meet with the true legislators, we meet with the aides. But, you know, Sarah really brought some very valid points together regarding the GAC, and it is an orchestrated opportunity for the voice to be heard. If you take a look at the number of people who speak and the power for positions that those individuals have who speak at these sessions, I would have to contend that this activity still has merit. I think what it is important for us to understand is that this activity, though, is only one moment in a grassroots activity that has to be nurtured and fed all the time. You cannot just rely on the GAC one time a year to make all of your statements and do everything you need to do. You have got to continue to stay involved in the political voice and make sure that it's being heard and that you're speaking to legislators and aides to get your point across and not just stop with just one activity.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Now, did you guys send anybody up to GAC this year?
Oh, yes, we did. We send a number of folks every year, and we rotate our senior management team in going so that we, number one, can manage our costs, and we can also allow for there to be a representative voice from senior management in each of these sessions. And in many cases, I think what Alexa said that was really important, I mean, she talked about how, like, they had a mini GAC just for them, 16
right.
people in a room with all these folks coming in and talking to them. And what happens is it's not always those big conference messages. It's the if you leverage the networking that you can do in those sessions, then they become even more valuable for you. And so I think you have to have that as an idea going there. It's not just, oh, I'm going to go see Washington, D.C., and, oh, I'm just going to go hike the hill, but I'm going to network. I'm actually going to do something while I'm there to try to make a difference.
And again, I agree with you. You know, I derive a certain percentage of my income from going to these live events. I've never spoken to GAC, but, I mean, I speak at Credit Union League and Trade Association events all over the country throughout the calendar year. And I think it's okay to be honest and say they are networking opportunities. I think there need to be very, very drastically different conferences. This might surprise you. I don't think they should do away with GAC. I think GAC will be relevant as long as direct mail is relevant. And if it's an opportunity to go up to D.C. and work with people, I love the young folks going up there and getting together. I'm just saying it's not my thing. And that brings me to something that you said last week after the show that I thought was very, very interesting and made for some good, tough talk. And that was a lot of times my opinion on things is based upon my generational experiences as a 43-year-old working in banking since the mid-90s, watching this evolution of technology and all these political and cultural changes that I've witnessed as an adult, old enough to kind of appreciate them. But you said something to me last week. You said, you know, Jason, you're from Generation X. My generation, even if it said, hey, we want there to be a GAC five times a year, there aren't enough of us to make a difference. And you used a great term, a great description. You said, Jason, yours is a generation that doesn't really know who you are. And I thought that was a really interesting point last week.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's basically just from some of the generational research and doing it. I don't think I put in quite 10,000 hours yet, and I believe that is the mark of being an expert is the putting forth the 10,000 hours. But in what research I have done, that's what I really felt is that Gen X, why don't we talk about Gen X? We don't talk about it because Gen X cannot distinguish itself clearly enough from a demographic study for us to be able to say what are some of its behaviors, because in many cases it flip-flops back and forth between
right.
It has a lot of tendencies to act like a baby boomer and then it has a lot of tendencies to act like the Gen Y. And that's why we focus a lot on the Gen Y perspective and what's actually happening. And we already know that the demographics of the Gen Y are twice as many as the Gen X. And then if you add into the fact that some of the Gen Xers kind of blend themselves over into the Gen Y, it makes them an even more important demographic
right.
for us to pay attention to. So, you know, and I think the other thing, too, that I've got to tell you, I'm really big on this lately. It's been a lot of my tough-talking kind of messaging, even here at the credit union. I have to make sure that as strategic thinkers, that we stop looking at where the ball is and we look at where the ball is going. and we start making decisions and strategic decisions and strategic alignments based on where the ball is going to be. Because if you consider in a sport like in football, I may have used this analogy before, but the runner runs to where he thinks the ball is going to be, not to where the ball is. Because if he ran to where the ball is, he'd be running toward the quarterback. And instead, he is running to where the play is designed, to where the ball is supposed to be placed. And I think that that's the way we have to start thinking about it from a credit union perspective. We have to stop just being, oh, we're the little guy in the whole program here, and start to saying, okay, where do I want the ball to be? And move
exactly.
the ball there.
And I agree with you.
Yeah, and I think some of that may liken a little bit to what you said about the recession in the early part when you ask if, you know, is it kind of like over? Do you kind of be mansy-pansy about it? What is it? You know, consumer confidence drives a whole lot as to whether or not we can declare ourselves out of it. You know, if enough people believe we're out of a recession, chances are you'll speak it into existence that you're out of a recession. When we get these economists and these analysts who are afraid to make a decision, they're afraid to take a stance one way or another on a topic, and they just become middle of the road, then what do you get? You get middle-of-the-road economy. I mean, how can you expect this whole thing to get better if people are relying on the experts to give them at least some advice or some direction, and the experts can't even figure it out? You know, you got to wonder, well, I guess it would be a good reason why we're stalled.
And of course, the experts are always surprised. Oh, the experts were surprised that unemployment went last month. If you're experts, you're never supposed to be surprised. Well, anyway, enough about the economy for a second. Just another show note. Next week on Friday, we're going to have one of the big award winners, Lynn Stevens from Mountain America Credit Union, brought home some hardware from GAC as an HR guru. And so we're going to talk to him next week about something I know you love, Troy, corporate culture, and how you create a great corporate culture, a culture that speaks for itself with the results that everybody can measure. And Lynn Stevens is going to be by to talk about that. We are no longer featured on the CU Water Cooler site. Not a big deal. They made some changes based upon a discussion we had about the NCUA and Susie Orman. It's their site. Troy, they're welcome to do whatever they want, and so we respect that decision. We're going to continue doing what we have always done here. And that is talk honestly about the contemporary credit union marketplace that you and I are both active participants in. And I will always err on the side of results. I don't give people a lot of credit for intentions. I mean, intentions are just that. They're intentions. I like measuring results. And when you and I do the tough talk and the point-counterpoint, we're just going to continue to do what we've always done, give people things to think about as we make our way through this new marketplace that you and I are doing business in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that for me, the value in doing a point counterpoint is actually having two professionals speak a representative voice about it. And, you know, what I have to say is that, you know, I don't know, you know, we're not going to take every point counterpoint and research it like it's a, you know, like a doctorate thesis that we're doing. It's basically saying, I have a qualified opinion based on this data, based on these particular facts, and so I'm going to make my point, and I'm going to make my point relevant based on the data at hand, and it will just be part of what shapes how it is. And, you know, like you, I'm pretty tough in that I do have a very strong opinion, and daggone it, I'm going to speak that opinion, and gosh, I never speak it to make you wrong. I speak it because it's my opinion, and I'm entitled to it, and so that's just how it goes.
And you believe it, and, you know, I sent you some stats for the month of February. We had a lot of archive listens to the show, and people that are listening, I hope you know, Troy shapes and molds the show in ways that you never see behind the scenes. And he, a lot of times, is the very necessary counterbalance to my instincts when it comes to subject matter and content for the show. And Troy, I told you last week that I try to find a teachable moment from an experience that I had 20 years ago this week, and try to apply it. And I thought, since, you know, we go into bonus time, people can choose to tune out or tune in. That's up to them. But I was thinking about 20 years ago. It's hard to believe. The Gulf War ended. I think it was on February 28th in 1991. And I was serving in Saudi Arabia and Western Iraq. And it just was one of those Glenn Miller World War II black and white moments. A bunch of young guys who have never owned a computer, never owned a cell phone, never sent a Twitter or done a Facebook wall post, huddled around an AM transistor radio, listening to President Bush, the first President Bush, make the announcement that offensive operations would stop at I think it was 12 o'clock midnight or 12 o'clock noon. I can't remember. You can go on Wikipedia and find out when it was. And then later that week, I rejoined a detail that I had done before the ground war. I was riding with a administrator from the Prince Faisal Military Academy. And we'd go out into the city, and we'd drive back and forth from Escon Village to the academy. And the reason I liked it is when I went out in the city, I was allowed to be armed. I felt like I was at least protecting myself. And I know this week you and I have had a lot of discussion about the right tenor of a conversation, the way that we approach things. And I want people to understand why I am the way I am, why I get so headstrong about things. Because the last time I chickened out on something, it literally broke my heart. It was a week ago. I mean, 20 years ago this week, it was after the war ended. It was the 4th or 5th of March. We're in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And myself and this gentleman from the King Faisal Air Base there in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, were driving through the city. And we came upon a scene that you can't imagine in Charleston, South Carolina. You can't imagine in New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. You can't imagine in North Carolina. It was a scene, if you've ever, you know, go on Google Saudi Arabia, their customs and stuff like that, they have a group of volunteer special police called the Muqwa, and they go around enforcing all the Sharia Islam laws. And so we're walking through this crowd, and there's a lady there, just as beautiful a woman as I've ever seen, and she's getting pushed and smacked around. And Troy, you and I are gentlemen. We would not know how to react to a situation like this except to get involved, right?
Right, exactly.
So my Western Christian sensibilities are, go stop this. And I have the means to stop it. I'm sitting there. I'm fully kitted up. I'm in shock. And the guy that's with me is looking at it the way you might look at a guy shining shoes. It's just no big deal. And I start to walk forward, and he grabs my shoulder, and he says, Jackson, Jackson. He could never say my name, Jason. He would say, Jackson, Jackson, like Mike Jackson. He said, Jason, they will kill you. And so we got back in the Humvee and we left. And I thought, this is what happens when you don't stand up for things. This is what happened when you back down. I don't know what would have happened that day. But how many people listening to the show right now that are women drove to work today? I respect what you said last week so much about erosion of freedoms. When I come on this radio program every week and say, across this wonderful country of ours, I mean that. And I think in a free country like ours, we should be able to talk about things amongst professionals. Troy, you and I don't always agree on things, but we're friends.
Yeah. So I think that's an important aspect of the whole idea of freedom. You see, freedom for me is not just taking all the good things I like about it. It's all, and for me, in my faith, and we talk about faith, and that I believe in God, and I believe in the inclusion of God in everything. It's not just all when everything is working really well. It's like even in the things that aren't working well. The all-inclusiveness of the higher being is an all-inclusiveness of the higher being. You take it all together. And so it's kind of like with people, when you choose to be friends or not be friends, I mean, you've got to take a look at the whole picture and decide, okay, there may be moments that I don't agree with that person, but what I do is I source it from, well, what is the intention maybe of what is happening? And sometimes I have to also give people a little grace. You know, I got to figure out, well, like, what's going on with them? And if you create vested interests in relationships and friendships, you never burn bridges. You never cut them off just simply because there may have been a moment in time where that indiscretion was not what you would have had. And if you really feel that strongly about it, then you might speak a particular opportunity and come to a negotiated common ground. I mean, sometimes the problem that we have in this country is that we don't come up with enough opportunities for common ground. We just simply say, look, you're not on my side. I drew the line in the sand. Get away from me. I don't want to deal with you. And I feel that there are more opportunities for us to do it. The reason for the line in the sand is to create a distinctive conversation. It's not to cut people off who don't move from one side to the next. It's to be able to create the common ground by which that line can actually mean something for everyone.
Well, I agree with you. And I mean, I carried around that experience for 20-some-odd years. So just one of those one of those weird things that you don't experience unless you get out of the comfortable confines of suburban Northeast San Antonio, where I grew up. Hey, listen, before we end the show today, you and I have got to thank Christina for emailing that chicken noodle soup last week.
Yes, that was great.
Christina, I felt better the next day.
It's that magic email chicken soup.
It was a thing of beauty. it looked like something out of like an old, not Old Navy, what's it called, Crate and Barrel, Pier 1 magazine. It's very beautiful. And just looking at it, I actually went to Chick-fil-A and got some of their chicken noodle soap, which I highly recommend. Just don't try going there on Sunday. And I did feel much, much better, and I wanted to thank you so much for that.
Yeah,
oh, you're welcome. I'm a very good cook.
And if my nose wasn't so stuffed up, I swear I would have smelled it.
Well, I hope both of you are feeling better now.
Oh, I feel much better. Troy's getting there. I think he's probably at 90%. But Troy at 90% is better than most credit union professionals at 50%. So we'll take that.
You are a nice man. I guess that makes it true that not only are the topics hot, but the hosts are hotter.
Well, no, the hosts are handsome. Now, Christina, you know, you've seen us both. I mean, are we out of line here when we say that the talk is hot and the hosts are handsome?
Oh, you guys are okay.
See, I paid her $7, and I knew she'd take the money. Hey, listen, Christina, you have a great week out there in North Carolina.
We'll
look forward to chatting with you next week.
Yep, we'll see you.
Hey, Troy, man, thank you for another great show. If it's Friday, it's Radio Free. You and I will be doing the same thing, same place next Friday, and I'll talk to you then.
Thank you. Have a good week.
You too, man. Take care. Thank you so much for being on the show.